How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and SuperDeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and SuperDeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Savannah Guthrie talked this week to Hoda on the Today Show, and what she revealed isn't just grief. It's details that are beginning to reframe this case. The suspect visited her mother's home, according to her, on two separate occasions. Her brother, a former fighter pilot, recognized this as a targeted kidnapping within minutes of the call, and investigators are now actively working the theory that the man at the front door was not the only person there that night. More information, none of it actually putting us closer to actually getting Nancy Guthrie. But it's more information, so that's something. Joining us to discuss, as always, Robin Dreek, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and also with us, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI Special Agent. I always love having you two together. It's always an interesting deep dive into this. Jen, let's start with the new revelations that have come out from Savannah. It's her words. It's not from an investigative source or investigator. It's Savannah Guthrie speaking. What was your take away after that interview?
I got to tell you, from an emotional standpoint, blew me away. From an investigative standpoint, blew me away. There were so many particulars that she mentioned that really impact this investigation. First of all, the major one was that two notes she believes, and I think she believes them because law enforcement believes them, are real. So those two notes she believes are real. And I have to say, I'm not surprised. I don't think all of us believe they weren't real. It wasn't that. It was that, were they truly for money, or was it much more deep-seated to hurt and to just cause more pain for the family? Which is the typical reason why people do these ransom notes that are fake, right? Not really for money. So in this case, what I though gleaned by her saying they're real is they're from the real abductors. And that is a big revelation today.
Yeah. Do you think, Jen, that those are, because again, as, because attacking this from two sides, definitely targeted for targeted at home for something inside. And now, because of Savannah stuff, I've kind of swayed back more towards, you know, the targeted abduction side, because that those statements about those notes, do you think those the notes that were sent in to TMZ that everyone knows about that she thinks were real, or are they something that was privately held that no one's even heard of?
I think they're the two notes that TMZ got. TMZ, I believe, got six notes. There were the two notes, and then there were notes that followed that said, basically, we know the bad guys, and if you send me money, we'll tell you who they are. You know,
why? You know, it's just that this, but you know, it's one of those things. Like every, and I was watching another news show this morning, and they were saying the same thing. It's fitting a pattern of this, but then it blows up because then it doesn't. Like, why would, if they're going for money, why would they do it that way? That's never been done that way before. What do you think was going through their head?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I want to say, Robin, thank you. You swayed over to me. Remember our last
conversation? I'm back to 50-50 on this one.
I'll take 50 of it.
Yeah,
don't count your chickens before they hatch.
I hit like give up mode yesterday on this. I'm like, Jesus.
So this is the thing. And it's kind of funny because from the when I look back at the first discussions we had, Tony, I really thought this was all about absolute agony and pain for the family. The notes match that. I've always said that the notes were about agony and pain for the family, and the deed itself was agony and pain for the family. So I can't agree more. And I still believe that the whole money thing was secondary, right? You don't go to a media company. You don't know what they did. You don't do what they did to get money,
right?
But do what they did to absolutely cause pain and suffering for this family.
Why do you don't think there's leakage anywhere else on that? You know, because like again, it's a typical, but this is very atypical. I know. I'm just curious. I mean, you've been really spot on with a lot of these. You know, using the obscure and say, yeah, look, it's actually turning mainstream because of it. Why do you think that there was no other leakage of like vendetta or vindictiveness, or do you think it was targeted for Savannah or Nancy herself? And I'll stop, Tony, that after this one, you go back to you.
No, you know, when I look at it, I think that there's just a couple of things in Nancy's background that just can't be ignored as a possibility. In other words, she had extremely strong political views. And we are right now in a climate that is insane in terms of the far, far left and the far, far right. What people that subscribe to either of those are willing to do for their beliefs. It's unbelievable what we're seeing, right? And she was a far, far right in her views. So to me, you just can't overlook that she was her own woman. She had her own views. She was well known. And could that be it? But then you also can't overview, you know, Savannah. Savannah is the one with the huge reach, with millions following her, with all the money, all of that. And so, you know, which one? I tend to think Savannah.
I'd love to understand why they think the notes are real. I mean, I get that that's how Savannah feels. Is that how the investigators feel? I guess would be the next question. There was a lot of things that Savannah revealed in that documentary about her feelings. And she's entitled to all of that, without a doubt. But at the same point, if we're talking about actual, like, investigative leads, you know, her feelings are not investigative leads. So what I'm curious, like, what is it in about these notes that makes anyone think that they're legit? I mean, 'cause again, it's like, okay, if they're legit, they came out and they said, here, you can have the money. Let us know how to get it to you, basically. No one's come forward for the money, alive or dead. I don't know. I have a real hard time still trying to wrap my mind around these notes having any sort of legitimacy to them, other than it was, unless they just didn't care about the money, and it was just strictly for torment.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is wrapping our heads around the fact that this wasn't the money after it all went south. This was just about continued cruelty and torment. When you look at it that way, it makes a lot of sense. I believe it was just last week when we talked, I said, what the hell's going on with the notes? Where's the FBI at on that? That's a huge piece of this case. The fact that they can't solve that. And then also the fact that you look at, they can't solve what happened to her physically, that this was done well enough. And it does make me believe that this is more orchestrated than, of course, initially thought when everybody thought that was Bumbling Bob on the porch. And now everybody's kind of erased that thought because he's gotten away with it for almost 2 months.
Go ahead.
I'm going back to the notes. I'm with you on this one, Tony, because notes, again, they haven't revealed the exact content. All they said, it was so descriptive. And I ran my own thing where if you take the public images that you had of Nancy's home and the bedroom that were out there and you ran it through AI to create this kind of ransom note with a lot of detail, it will create a really well-crafted note. And then it actually prevented me from doing that. So I actually had to do it on my own family. I ran it on my wife, who has zero social presence on the internet at all. And it gave a really, really, it created a really great ransom note off of someone that has almost a zero web presence. And so I'm struggling with it too, just because it looks like a spearfish to me more than it does anything else. But again, if you look at it through the lens, like you said, of just inflicting pain and suffering, which doesn't happen all that often. Again, to keep going back to
One just doesn't make sense to me either, because it's like, okay, she's really right-leaning. So are a lot of people. Why would you go after a 91-year-old? Why would you go after this 84-year-old woman who has, you know, a political opinion? It's not like she's out there like,
and it means,
running
and it
campaigns
means it's,
or...
It means it's the first one, too, because, again, there's always outliers. And that's, but, again, it would be the very first outlier for us to actually politically target a close relative of a celebrity. Because, again, I looked it up. The last time this was done, I think, was the 80s. There was, like, three I could find. Again, it doesn't mean it's not. It's just, it's so tough because... It fits and then it blows up. Then it doesn't.
I mean, I haven't really talked about it because I've taken it for what I thought it kind of was just utter speculation and noise on this. But early on, I mean, everybody was trying to figure out what's going on here with this. Of course, everyone was, well, it's a distraction to the Epstein files. Okay. I mean, that seems to be any news story is a distraction to the Epstein files. news is going to happen. So, it can't be everything is a distraction to it. But do you think we got anything there? I mean, or is there anything, if this is for pain and suffering, why? I mean, because the thought process, I think, on some of that was, well, Savannah had interviewed, some of the victims and things. But it was a while back that she did. It wasn't like she has a big interview coming up next week and, you know, let's go kidnap your mom and shut that thing down. It was more than a year ago, 2-3 years ago, I think, was when she sat down with...
There's many more inflammatory people in the news right now than Savannah Guthrie.
She's not an inflammatory person. I mean, and she's as vanilla as it gets on so many things. I guess I'm just trying to wrap my head around the motivation here on targeting Nancy Guthrie because she's liberal or some sort of retribution to Savannah for what I don't know, but there's nuts. I mean, there's nutterers out there, the Reagan assassination attempt. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean they're thinking clearly either.
Well, and I want to be crystal clear on this, that first of all, I think this was a targeted abduction, kidnapping for ransom that went south.
Yeah.
That they came in there, they took her, and it blew up because she died. Yeah. I think it's very possible that she died straight away.
Then didn't they come back for the money, though, with her being dead? Because that was offered, too.
Right. It was offered, too. But you know what? It was... I just don't think... So first of all, remember, there were two notes, right? The original note, we don't know everything about it, but we know there was a quid pro quo with a deadline. If you don't do this, and then we never got to hear what it's implied that we're going to kill her, right? Because in the later, in number three, in the third conversation that Nancy Guthrie has, where she says, we know she's probably not with us, but bring her back. You know, we need to have peace, that whole peace and kind of religious thing she says. So, and that was after the deadline, right? So that's the order of things. And we still don't know, but those are the two notes that she would be lining up are real. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at that, how do they think they're real? And I know what you're saying, Robin, because it's was that floodlight broken before they ever went in? In other words, it's just a broken floodlight, and you could see that on a Google map at some point. Could you do your homework to know that she had the Apple Watch because you just watched the Today Show? She has an Apple Watch, and you know you can't wear an Apple Watch at night for a pacemaker, so she puts it on her nightstand, right? Mm-hmm. Those were the two kind of things that came out. Could you just figure that out? And I think you could.
Right.
Were there other details? And they said there were, by the way, mm-hmm. a lot of other details. And when you think about the FBI's reaction to all of this, it was extremely proactive. Get them out there. Get this, you know, what they were going to say rehearsed. Get everything done. Make a play on it. So for those reasons, I think the Bureau believed in them from the get-go because of
or,
much time
the Bureau, yeah, but also did, remember, Kash Patel loves sending agents all over the place for the show. So, because I've been part of that as well. I mean, I was, long before he was involved, when I was in New York, every time there's a major event, we wanted to make sure there's agents there. So if someone died, they can say agents were there dying with them. I mean, that was literally what I was told. So I'm always kind of hesitant saying just because they sent agents out there meant they believe it was plausible, just because I've seen the show we sometimes put on. It's not disparaging anyone. I just, because I actually know people that were diverted to there because of wanting to make sure there's a presence as well. So maybe...
I guess I don't mean that so much as I mean that partially, but I don't mean that. I mean, remember when they talked about the notes mm-hmm. and the specificity of them, and then they made the family take action.
Right. Oh, and I thought they did a great job on that, by the way. That was really good. I mean, the messaging they worked on them with, I think, has been probably the highlight for me is all the messaging that Savannah and her family has been doing that's been coordinated with them. I thought that was really well done.
Well, I agree with you, Tony. There's no way to make sense of an outlier.
Yeah,
that's right.
Struggling with, they're going, wait a minute, this isn't your usual abduction for ransom. It doesn't fit the peg. So we're just going to abandon that. And I think it's much more clear that that's what authorities think that this was. And it makes sense because it's Occam's razor. The part that doesn't quite fit then are these two notes matching. Because they keep 3 days later.
Yep. What do you think was in those notes that caused the reaction that it did from the family? The video responses that were quoting, what was it? Silence of the Lambs was being quoted in. I mean, what the hell? Okay, so I mean, this is just pure speculation. But what do you think was in those notes that would make that be the reaction? Because it's an odd reaction to have to a note to be quoting Silence of the Lambs in a situation like this that's real life.
Well, I did a huge deep dive into this, exactly what we're talking about here. And mm-hmm. that is the point that those notes and the reaction to them always made it seem so familiar. Mm-hmm. In other words, it was so personal and, mm-hmm. you know, you'll have a second chance. It's never too late. You know, everyone's important. And I'm paraphrasing here, everyone deserves forgiveness. This is a quote. Everyone makes mistakes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was so very personal, as if there was some linkage between whoever did this to the Guthries in a very personal way.
Yeah, almost like they're like, again, pure speculation, but like the notes must have had something in there about grievances or something against the family or against something to respond that sort of way. Because, I mean, it almost sounded like they were reasoning with a child, you know, like, it's okay, everything's going to be fine, you know, you can change, it'll be good. It's like, what's going on here? Why are we speaking like this? It didn't make a lot of sense. But that would make more sense if the notes were rather nutty, you know, where it's like, okay, this is somebody who's not playing with a full deck that seems to be writing this. We need to really handle this with kid gloves because they clearly, you know, can go any way at any given time, judging by their writing. I'm going to guess, again, pure conjecture on something I've never seen. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's just was this huge personal error. And then remember in one of Savannah's responses after that, she actually used overarching themes from her book that she had written. Remember, that's the book where they talk about kidnapping. She talks about how they played kidnapping games. And then she used one quote and then overarching themes about forgiveness and it's not too late and all of that. So it was really a psychobabble, you know, theology test. It was weird. And there's no way that BAU didn't have their hand in that. They get to decide what they say. And she said that. She said it was really, we were one unit, meaning her, Cameron and Annie and her, in terms of what they were going to say. She never mentions the Bureau or BAU, but you know that they were, at least in part.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it also, she did a great job because she had an empathetic note, which is what we're talking about here, is the empathetic appeal. If the person that they're intending to go to actually has empathy, it'll appeal well. Then she had the next message that also was very procedural. Here's the nuts and bolts of actually do this, in case they have someone who's actually just, hey, let's just cut to the chase. I mean, I thought the messaging was very, very well done, because it was so targeted for different personality types throughout it. And it kept shifting depending on, you know, a lack of response. It's like, all right, because if you're going to, because this is a challenging one, because if you're going to target a note to someone who just potentially killed someone or was going to take them for ransom, the likelihood this person has a high level of empathy, it really diminishes. Yet it's an extremely empathetic note, to your point. But I think, so my impression, it was targeted not really necessarily for the individual, but people around that individual, because not everyone's going to be a pure nut job, only half nut jobs.
I agree.
Should they why not release them now, I guess, would be the question, these notes. I mean, to see if somebody can recognize it as the writing of, you know, crazy Uncle Bill or what, you know, whatever the hell it would be.
I'll tell you why there's no way you can. And in fact, her saying, even though it was very interesting as an investigator hearing about the pajamas and no shoes, that was all interesting, but that was a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. Because now when somebody calls, I feel bad for the tip line people, because now there are another, you know, 150 wackadoodles out there that are just causing problems that are going to say, or even if they're not wackadoodles, if they truly believe they saw this, they're literally going to, I saw this older woman and she was walking around and she didn't have any shoes and she had on pajamas. You know what I mean? They take those details. Whereas if somebody would have called in to the police and said, hey, on, you know, this date, I know this is weird, but I thought I saw somebody in a car with pajamas on. They got out with no shoes, right? Then you're paying attention because it's not known to the public. So if you release details about that note, and remember, the Bureau is not only chasing this kidnapping piece, they're chasing guarantee. They have not only hired people, but they're also chasing them within their cyber units. Mm-hmm. Who did these notes?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. We haven't seen the other four either.
Yeah.
In other words, are those the same people also? Because they can't find them. And they had the same MO
yeah.
to the station in an email.
Wouldn't that be at this point? Wouldn't it be helpful to release this out to the public at this point if they're just hitting a brick wall? I mean, I think it's pretty much assumed she's dead. So it's not like the clock is ticking here to get her back alive at this point. It's more who did this. I don't know. I mean, is there ever going to be a point where it makes sense to release these things if they never get anywhere with their own investigative leads, you know, behind the curtain?
Maybe they are, though.
Maybe they are.
Because that's what you never see is because the only person we've ever heard from is the sheriff. And we know how all over the place he is on what he said. And we still don't know, you know, so you start getting more leakage typically, and Jen knows this much better than I do on the work in crim matters. You know, you only start getting leakage of more information being put out when what you're working on is dried up and you flush it all out. So I always take it, at least from what looks like good investigators in his department, because again, their clearance rate has been really good for a long time, irrespective of him. So I'm still always hopeful that we haven't heard more because they haven't need to release more. What do you think, Jen?
You know, I think they are at a place of no pointer, I call it. They don't have a pointed direction. They don't have any suspects. I think they are still drinking from a fire hose. So there's a big difference between cold and no pointer, right? Mm-hmm. Cold is you don't have anything to work with. They're not there. I mean, they have 30,000 tips, all this video, blah, blah, blah. So it's not cold. It's red hot from that perspective. But in terms of having a pointer, I think they don't have it. Yeah. But the biggest thing the public can help with is that picture being disseminated everywhere of Porch Guy. And I just don't think that that is happening enough. Everybody's seeing Savannah. Everybody's seeing Nancy. Nobody is seeing Porch Guy. And they're not reaching the Hispanic community, which is a huge mistake. And that $1.2 million has become an after comment.
Yeah, no, good point on that.
Beacon.
And you're right about those leads, too, because you're right. Because I think what we're both saying is comes together because they're not gonna try to generate 10,000 more leads if they're still working through 10,000 leads, even though there's no direction to them yet, but they still have to sift through them with limited resources.
And maybe there's something within those 10,000 leads that they just haven't gotten
you
to
never
yet.
Know.
Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear them. Please do weigh in there. Let's continue the conversation about another aspect of this case. Sheriff Nanos, his own deputies, just voted unanimously 241-0 to demand his resignation. Records reported by the Arizona Republic show Sheriff Chris Nanos resigned from the El Paso Police Department in 1982 in lieu of termination after allegedly accumulating 26 disciplinary allegations in 5 years, including excessive force and insubordination. His deputies say none of that was disclosed when he came to Pima County many, many years ago, 40-some years ago now. And according to reporting by the Arizona Republic and ASPM, when Nanos was asked in a December 2025 deposition whether ever he had ever been suspended, he reportedly testified that he had not in the course of his career. And he goes back and they're saying, I thought you were just talking about here in Pima County, even though the question was about his career. So the Board of Supervisors is now trying to compel him to answer these questions under oath. And also, his union wants him to resign. Jen, what are your thoughts on all this? Another vote of no confidence. It's not the first one that he's had. It's kind of a pattern and a track record that he's got going on. But he kind of does things his own way. What do you think? When everybody's saying we don't believe in you, is it time?
Well, you know what? He is a guy that I've really tried to give some deference to because it's difficult to be in his shoes. It's difficult to run an investigation with everybody breathing down your back, looking at your every move. But he has officially on my last nerve with all of the misinformation, the back and forth about the 11th, not knowing the date or at least saying it correctly that this that she went missing. The confusion about the decision not to allow these searchers to search when now it's clear they don't have a pointer. Seems pretty clear. I actually gave him deference on that because I said, listen, you know what? public, there's a chance that they know exactly what happened to Nancy, and she is in Mexico. So imagine what happens now when everything comes out, an arrest is made, it's a huge deal, and we find out that from such and such a date, they knew they were in Mexico, yet they have the Cajun Navy searching, Madres Buscadoras, and EcuSearch spending weeks there when they knew that she wasn't there. So I said, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt with this decision making. But now there's just so much. It just seems like he wants to be the hero, even though he was at a basketball game literally right before and after, I believe. It might be right after or before that initial statements were made by the family. Like, they're getting ready to go on and bare their souls, and he's at a hoops game.
Yeah. His optics are horrendous. And I'm with you, Jen. You know, when I researched the stats on him as the department, and then I looked at other people in positions like his with big cases, and when you look at the numbers, he's average. You know, his department is really good for clearance rates, which says, hey, we got good investigators, but that's, again, not because of him, maybe in spite of him. But all these other things are just, he wore himself down. He wore his own credibility down. No one else did it for him. Like you said, I'm curious, what do you think the impact on the investigation, on the investigators themselves, is because of those actions?
That is such a great question. And this is where I look at it right now. For instance, there's a guy that was his supervisor. Some of you, he's been interviewing all over God's green earth, but which is great because he's trying, obviously he cannot stand Nanos. He was his supervisor. He is, I believe, the most experienced in terms of years of a sergeant they have in their department. And they have the guy answering phones about, you know, missing cats and, you know, whatever. And you look at that and you just ask yourself, to me, you look at it and you say, whoa, wait a minute. Why, if these are these little vendettas that he has, and I think that's the biggest part of this no confidence vote, is that if he doesn't like you, he gets rid of you. He deep sixes you. He makes it so you're not working. And what if that guy is the guy that had the thought process that could have led or saw the clue that meant this could have been solved? I'm just saying, the more brains with the most experience, that's who you want out there in this. You 100%. Don't want to find a telephone. So I think it has a lot of impact, not just morale, but much more significant than just morale.
Yeah, because in as telling Tony the other day, you know, inside organizations with people like this, been there, done that, you typically find a way to work around people like that, you know, because you know, hey, they're just looking out for their promotion. They're just taking care of themselves. Hey, no big deal. I'm not going to hold it against you. That's your thing. But I'm going to do the righteous work here. And I know how to work you so I can work my cases. That happens all the time in organizations. But like you said, in this case, he's derailing the investigation potentially because he's taking those righteous workers that are there for the mission and removing them from the mission. And they have years and generations of reps that they're bringing to the fight. And so, as I said the other day, he might not be derailing it, but he's slowing it down. But if you are actually removing these successful people, in other words, he has these high clearance rates, like 90% for the last 5 years or above, and 100% in 2024. But if you're removing the guys from those positions that got you that is really a problem.
Is his goal to be the superhero here at the end of the day? Is it to be the one who I don't know that you walk back from any of this or fix your image at this point when everybody has no confidence in you? Unless, you know, he, you know, delivers Nancy Guthrie alive on a platter tomorrow. In lieu of that, I don't see anything that's going to save his image. But does he care? Does he even care what people think of him? I'm going to go with no. I don't think it even, you know, bothers him in the least of any sort of negative opinions that people have about him, because it seems it's kind of been his track record. It's just white noise at this point, it seems.
You know, Robin and I think we'll agree on this point that past behavior is a predictor of future behavior, and past things that happen in the past predict what will happen in the future. And when you look at the Idaho 4 case, which there's only really about a handful of cases that were ever this big, right? JonBenet Ramsey, Gabby Petito, the Idaho 4, off the top of my head, Lacey Peterson, that just blew up and exploded like this for an extended period of time. And when you look at the Idaho 4 case and Chief Fry, which, by the way, I actually really like Chief Fry. I felt terrible for him because the fact of his messaging was such a train wreck, like saying that nobody out there is dangerous. And what happened to him? He retired after that case, and then he tried to be a sheriff there in his own Latah County and lost by a huge margin. And so my point here is, I don't think there's any way that Sheriff Nanos will ever survive this. But look, I loved Chief Fry generally. I mean, I think he's a good-hearted, hardworking guy that just was over his head, so to speak. But when I say over his head, I mean just having a case that would be all over almost anybody's head.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you look at this guy, oh my gosh, he has such a different way of coming off that is so unlikable and arrogant and all the words you know. And I think he's a fighter. I think he'll throw out anything, any sort of mud against the fence. I think he goes after people who disagree with him and tries to beat them. And I don't think he's going to go away. They're going to have to drag him kicking and screaming to get him off the sheriff's stage.
Which does that mean he just has to run out his term? I mean, I know they're trying to do the recall election, which, I mean, that's a feat unto itself to try and accomplish that. I mean, could it be done? Sure. But, you know, again, my microwave could take me to the moon, too. I don't know that it will. But, you know, it's like, yeah, the technology is better, but it's not going to do it. So, like, what do you think there's any lever that's going to be pulled that's going to get him out of here? Him resigning, or is it just going to be he's got what, a couple years left, and then as he doesn't get reelected?
I think that's the future.
Yeah,
I doubt this recall election will work unless they have tens of thousands of people collecting votes, because they've got to get 10,000 votes a day. They've got only 120 days to get, it's actually over 120,000 votes that they need, because it's a percentage. It's so rare. I mean, I looked up all these cases and they haven't been able to do it in the past. I don't think it's possible, because of, not that people don't want to sign it, but just also think how many people have no idea who Sheriff Nanos is.
Yeah.
Right. And to also your point, you know, we agree on a lot, Jen. and especially when it comes to Chief Fry. I love judging an individual also by how the people around them view them. And his department was really good. I like their handling of a lot of things. You could see how they interact with the community, because how they interact with the community is how they're interacting internally. And again, when you see healthy communication, healthy behavior, that comes from the top. And so he might, like, I'm with you, not experienced. That went from 0 to 100 in his span there. I think, what was it? I think it was only 14 years ago prior to that murder of Koberger is when they actually had their last murder. I mean, there's no reps there. But again, good, healthier community, good, healthier culture where people liked him. Nanos, completely different. Everyone, I mean, who came out and said they liked him? Who's defending him?
No one.
No, one person.
I actually, early on, I mean, it was funny because I'm not saying trying to make excuses, but I would at least say, hey, listen, this is a tough job. He's got a lot going on.
Yep.
These are his statements, which I don't think he would do if the Bureau wasn't behind them. I don't know. I try to give some leniency toward these guys, but He's a hard one. I guarantee you Chief Fry does not have a souped up vet he's swirling around in the middle of this case.
And herein lies, then it goes to that question too. Should these people in these positions be elected or appointed? Because Chief Fry, he wasn't elected. I mean, he rose to the ranks and this is a position he got because he had experience. He's, you know, you're groomed into it, you're trained into it, and as opposed to elected into it, because that adds a whole nother dimension. This, you know, we're talking about this the other day too, is, you know, this guy's elected like our politicians are elected, who can't lead themselves out of a paper bag 90% of the time, you know. So why should that be the same process for someone who actually, like this, is going to be literally responsible and leading hundreds of lives and then responsible for hundreds of thousands of lives in the territory that they're covering? That's a different kind of thing. You need to have different levers you can pull to remove morons from bad positions.
Yeah, I would agree. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in there. We'll continue the conversation right there. Now on to this. Two brothers from the same house, two sets of child S abuse allegations. One family with a decade-long documented history of managing harm quietly. Until the legal system finally catches them, Joseph Duggar's arrest and interstate extradition to Florida isn't just another chapter of the long-running scandal of the Duggars. It's a moment a lot of people are asking the question no one in that family's orbit apparently wanted to ask. How deep does this go? How many people knew? And is anyone with real investigative power finally going to find out? Joining me to discuss this case, Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, and Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Guys, is this a case where more investigative power can be put into it at this point to dig deeper, to take a good close look at the digital devices of anyone in that house? I'd be really curious to see how deep we can get on this and how many other monsters we might find. Again, all conjecture. There's only been the two that have been charged. One's in prison. The other's being charged, innocent until proven guilty. We're talking interstate travel here at this point. He's going to be sent back to Florida. Does the FBI get involved at some point and start digging deeper than they've ever dug before on the Duggars?
Digging the Duggars.
Yeah.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Dig the Duggars.
Dang it. Yeah. That is so funny. We almost said it simultaneously. You know what? First of all, in any investigation, there's never a thing as too much investigation.
Uh-huh.
You can never dig deep enough. Even when you think you dig it all up, you can still find more. I'm a huge believer in that. So there's more there. This is one of those nasty cases.
Yeah.
So Jen, I think one of the biggest challenges of this, because I'm with you, there's got to be more here. I mean, these are just two that bubbled to the surface, right? I don't think it took a whole lot of digging to get these two. And so, you know, where there's smoke, there's probably even more.
But will
fire.
They? What?
Well, question. Yeah. I'm with you, Tony. It's like, how do you penetrate the closed wall, of this society to inspire people to feel safe enough to share that kind of information?
Well, you know, in a sense, and I'm not drawing a true analogy to this, but to your question, will they dig more? Look at the Adelsons. I understand two very different cases. All I'm saying about it is what it takes is a prosecutor.
Good prosecutor, yeah.
And if you have an aggressive prosecutor that wants to make sure everybody who was involved in something is brought to the surface, that's what it's going to take in this case. They got to have a prosecution team.
Yeah, really good point.
What kind of power do they have to dig beyond Joseph here? Obviously, Joseph and his wife, I mean, they've both been charged the different crimes here. And one's Arkansas charges, one's are Florida, one's are far more extreme. But what sort of power do they have to get at digital devices, to look beyond just those two? I mean, can they can they get the digital devices of other family members, of other people within this orbit? And I guess, what are the bounds as to which they can look and who they can ask for those devices of? Do they have to be people who were living in the house of these two? Or if they find some interesting things on those devices that they link over to other folks, can they compel people to give them their devices there? Does that take, obviously a warrant of some sort? But I guess, how far can they dig without other charges against other people, or before they get to other charges against other people, if they ever get there?
Well, two things. First of all, the biggest thing here is the standard. And the standard here is only probable cause to be able to get a warrant, and really less than that for subpoenas.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is, so basically you have a very low bar for investigative procedurally for them to get this type of information. The other thing is, there's a spider web effect when it comes to digital information. Uh-huh. And it's going to lead to other people. It's whatever you want to say, birds of a feather.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be drawn into the web. That's what I think. The web will spread, and it's just how aggressive their prosecution team is.
Yeah, I'm hopeful on that one too, Jen, because when you were saying that, it really made me think, all right, the spider web. So if you think about, again, Robin's thought experiment conjecture time, right? If you think about how closed off this society is and how insular they are, if one person learns one thing, it stays within that community. So if one nutter knows how to use the dark web and all these horrendous things for these horrendous images, that pattern of how they do that is going to be the thing that perpetuates. And so being able to see a pattern from where they got Joseph and Josh, Joshua, right?
Yeah.
You know, that same methodology they use is probably something they learned, maybe, you know, in a small little group. And so that kind of replicating patterns and seeing similar patterns is how I would definitely do it too, from that spiderweb mentality.
Is there a crime committed, if we're to look at their structure of the umbrellas of, they got the church and Gothard and God, you know, hanging out together. And then below that is the father, and then it's the mother. And then if you're under your umbrella, that's how you handle it. You bring your problems to the next person up on the umbrella, and they decide if they're going to go to the police or they're just going to handle it internally. And it seems most things get handled internally. Is it a crime if let's say a father had knowledge of these sort of things that were going on and did not report it to the police? Like, if they're to start to go through the digital history, emails, texts, whatever, anything, and it turns out that, let's say, a father, again, this is all just complete conjecture, none of this has necessarily happened, but let's say they find some sort of email, oh, okay, you found out you did this to this kid, you know, say your, you know, Hail Marys or whatever, and, you know, you're forgiven.
Oh, they sent you to work camp, remember?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, or you're going to go hang some drywall and, you know, mud and tape the S predator out of you. If they have the knowledge of the crimes and they don't report it, is that a crime in itself? Could that be prosecuted?
Yes. Two charges that just spring out to me are, one is failure to report.
Yep.
That's a violation. Child endangerment. Those are violations. So those just jump off the board to me. But to me, some of the other things to consider is there something even more egregious? Because I will say that typically people who are capable of sort of looking the other way, sometimes they become capable of much more.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going back to, and I'm thinking of Jim Bob when he was on the stand at Josh's. He was on the stand at a hearing prior to Josh's trial, and just claimed, you know, ignorance of, I don't remember. And then the judge eventually said, get out of my courtroom. You're not going to be a credible witness here. Goodbye. That's what I'm wondering about. I mean, I'm sure there are statute of limitations on certain things. And I look back on that and I'm go, why wasn't he ever prosecuted? I mean, I know he went with the I don't remember thing, and maybe there just wasn't a digital trail or something. And if he's publicly said he doesn't remember, but we've seen the interviews where he did know about what was going on with Josh and his own daughters. And according to their religion, he handled it and didn't report anything. They just dealt with it, you know, insularly within
their
community.
Don't stir the brethren. That's what they say. Don't stir up the brethren.
I don't know. I'm not accusing Jim Bob of knowing anything of what Joseph is up to. Joseph is a grown-ass adult, too. It's not their little kids living underneath his roof anymore. But I guess I'm just theoretically saying here, if let's say Joseph did come and talk to Dad about this, and Dad handled it internally, and they just had a conversation, and he didn't report it, I would wonder what could happen there. With the current day situation that's going on, where there may be digital evidence, there may be digital trails of conversations and knowledge that people have, and it being very much a crime to not report these sort of things, but it does follow their religion. Is there anything that saves them with it being their religion from them not reporting things out properly to prevent this sort of behavior where they think they're preventing it internally because of God?
No.
Good.
I mean, legally, no.
Yeah.
But again, and I hate to keep throwing this on the prosecution here, it really does come down to, because I tell you what, these agents, officers, whoever works these cases, we're always in there, man. We want the obvious guy. We want the low-hanging fruit guy.
Oh, yeah.
And then we want to get everybody in the web. I mean, these conversations are hilarious that you have with the prosecutors. It's like, and we always joked, at least I joked on our squad, God, he won't take anything but a whale in the bucket.
Right.
You know, he's got to have blah, 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 you know, and it's very frustrating as an investigator. So what do? You just keep digging and give them the rail in the bucket if it's something, you know, you feel that it should be prosecuted.
They got a lot to work with on this one, I think, because if you just watch the special as well, especially how it looks like they handled Joshua's issue years ago with sending him to the work camp as his cure, which is back to headquarters, and everything you're seeing on here, there's also potential if they dig deep. Again, I love your point, Jen, on the prosecutor comes out to that. There's potential trafficking in here as well, potentially.
Do you think they should be concerned if they have anything bad going on that they're going to be discovered very shortly? Do you think that there is going to be a thorough FBI investigation into the Duggar family beyond just Joseph being triggered by this? Is that a likely road that they're going to be going down here soon?
When you look right now at the priorities in the Bureau, being human trafficking is still up there. They would love to make a case beyond these two. So I think definitely that case agent that spent all this time, they want to dig their teeth in.
Well, that's good news. I like that.
I think it'll be really interesting, too, because they have such a closed society and a closed insular society. It'd also be curious what kind of language you're using for potential code for talking about these things, because they use a lot of that. Because they have their own special language for discussing things, for sharing things. I would think that, you know, you have people like these girls that have come out and talked about it, you know, could actually give a huge amount of insight, because, again, I keep going back to the special in the book, and that's literally the very tip of the iceberg of what we are seeing and things that were insinuated. It could go very deep.
It's going to be interesting. I hope to God it's isolated. I have a feeling it's not, but it's my conjecture. Who the hell knows?
Well, 2 of 19 in one family. Jeez.
Yeah.
Odds.
Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Odds, Robin.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
It's going to be telling. It's going to be very telling in the future to see what happens here. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, please do weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, thank you for being with us. And Robin, of course, always, thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. And you guys, weigh in the comments on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, for Robin, Todd, and Jen, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Big savings are in the air. Don't miss your chance at 15% cash back during Rakuten's Big Give Week. Shop and get rewarded at your favorite stores like Adidas, KitchenAid, Expedia, and hundreds more. So go ahead and refresh your closet, spruce up your home, book that trip, and much more. But 15% cash back is only from May 4th to the 11th. So join now. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app and join for free and start saving. That's Rakuten.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
His bone crying, and he said, "Coach, they killed him."
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming. Because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.